with episode 780 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Gary from Jacksonville. We're getting the shows this time, right, John?
We actually are. I know we kind of flirted with it last time, but we're actually going to get an episodic discussion this time around. And before we do any of that, Gary, I think it's time for another disclaimer.
I was going to say, this time my disclaimer will actually count. As we're reviewing these shows, we go into detail on each one of them. We will undoubtedly reveal some secret or part of the storyline in our discussions. We do this knowingly so that we can really dive into the episodes. If you don't want to be surprised, go watch the show and then come back and listen to our insightful critiques of it. Or if you want to be spoiled, just keep listening. As I said, it's not malicious. It's just really to get into the meat of the show. I'm sure you'll enjoy it either way. And we should be getting started soon.
That's right. That's right. And as usual, we are going to talk about the shows that wound up towards the bottom of the list from our scoring process and those that were up towards the top. And then anything in the middle there that we find, just happened to be worthy of discussion. And there's a few here. So let's go ahead and talk about those bottom three shows. And we'll talk very briefly about them because there wasn't a whole lot of cross discussion on these. Starting off in our first slot here with an average of 7.5 is Man in the High Castle, Season 2, Episode 7, Lando Smiles. Juliana's bond with the Smiths leads her to unearth an explosive secret. Elsewhere, Childen and Ed wind up in a complicated situation, and Frank learns about a frightening Japanese plan while he's on a mission for the Resistance. And this got a 7.5 because it felt like the season was slowing back down again. Not so much in a bad way, but just it's slower than it maybe should be, even though the plot threads are kind of coming together instead of feeling like they're all over the map. Which is nice, especially since Man in the High Castle did get renewed for a third season a little while back. So at least they are not falling apart now that they have a third season commitment. Also coming in at 7.5 is Salem, Season 3, Episode 10, Black Sunday. Survival is uncertain on the eve of Salem's demise. And this was the series finale, so I just gotta say, this third season was really a mess. I don't think they ever really found their footing. Even going to this finale, it felt like they were just grasping at straws and trying to find something that felt like it was a meaningful direction. I don't think even going back and watching the whole third season as a whole, binge-watching it would help. I think it just meanders way too much. But it was interesting to see that kind of the bad guys won at the end of the series, which is kind of surprising, considering... So there was a little bit of fun in seeing Anne, one of the, who started out as one of the most innocent characters and wound up being kind of the queen witch at the very end of the day. For her to be reigning triumphant at the end was kind of fun. It just was supposed to be a different character's story, so it's kind of a head-scratcher how that would turn out that way. And finally, down at the bottom, unfortunately, I have to say, it is...
What?
Supernatural, Season 12, Episode 9, First Blood. After being arrested for the attempted assassination of the President of the United States, Sam and Dean must find a way out of an underground, government-run detention facility in the middle of nowhere. Determined to find her sons, Marion Castiel seek assistance from an unlikely source. And imagine that description with about $20 to pull it off with.
What it felt like? Just low production?
It really felt like there was no production value whatsoever, and they were trying so hard to make it seem like it was this kind of big thing. But they're in a they've just been arrested for attempting the assassination of the president, supposedly, and they were in the least well-guarded detention facility in the history of television. There was one point where they were running through the woods, and it really looked like it was being filmed behind somebody's, warehouse. In the woods. That's how sparse the trees were. If you had just turned the camera around, 90 degrees, you felt like you would see, someone's backyard. It really felt cheap, and that they were trying to do something, and like I said, everybody was doing their best with what they had, but boy, did they not have very much. And, yeah, I felt kind of bad. I was watching it going, oh, guys. I'm glad that you're still around, and yeah, you even got renewed for next year, but can they just give these guys a little more money? Because it does get distracting. I know that budget shouldn't matter that much if the storytelling is good, but there was one good scene in this episode.
John, I told you that season was coming where it was just going to be the car and a brick wall. I don't know when you're... Maybe yeah, we've reached it already. Yeah,
pretty close to that. And the thing that really bothered me about it was that it wasn't like this was an episode written by new people and like a first-time director. This was the current showrunner and their most reliable director for the last 12 seasons. And this is what they came up with. It was like, okay, wow. Yeah, you are struggling very much with how you're pulling off some of this stuff because they're not even really biting off more than they can chew. It's just... they only have so much to work with.
Mm.
Yeah, so it was a little disappointing, so it got a 6.5. Because, yeah, it's... And I think it, like, struggled to get there, and it was that one scene that kind of elevated it at the end, but... Whew, yeah.
I don't think it's ever gotten that low.
Been at the bottom. Lower. It's gotten lower. And there was an episode that it was essentially about bestiality a few seasons ago that infamously got, like, a 4 or 4.5.
So. Oh, okay.
Yeah, this isn't quite that bad, but this is them definitely fighting the effects of the budget, to say the least. All right, so as I said, we're going to kind of get beyond that and talk about some other shows here that are at the top of the list. And I just need to do one quick shift here, but as I do that, we can talk about the... Hold on for a second. There we go. The number 3 show for the week, which is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 4, Episode 12, Hot Potato Soup. Two agents are hunted during a search for the Darkhold book, and the team try to save them. That really glosses over a couple things, doesn't it?
It's almost Madman quality, yes, as far as the description goes. I will say the... they had a lot of little nice things in this. One of the cutest ones that I enjoyed was we finally found out that... who is it? What's this agent?
Koenig.
That they were not LMDs as I originally thought they were back in season one. They're just triplets. So that was a sort of nice sort of reveal about them that, you know, this initial thing that, oh, they must be, you know, androids or something like that because they're all alike. But no, it turns out that they are not actually the LMDs. The LMDs are much worse. So I thought that was a really nice reveal. It was a bit of a slapstick episode, but I really liked it. And I guess I want to jump around this episode a little bit and ask you, John, at what point did you think that Coulson figured out May was a robot? Because I can't tell. I don't know if it was that second where she wouldn't release the Darkhold, but he seemed rather relaxed and confident, as if I almost had a sense like he had suspicions or something. Or maybe he's just so cool and collected that he just turned on a dime and went with it, but it almost seemed like he had a suspicion.
It really did. It felt like, actually, in retrospect, like as soon as she started opening up about her feelings,
yes,
that he was aware something isn't right here, because it's like, okay, it's nice that you're kind of saying, you know, we can finally start moving on this thing, and clearly he was not averse to the idea at all, but he also knew in the back of his head, wait a second, this isn't something she would normally do, and even if she's sitting here saying we finally have the right moment, actually this is not a really good moment, this is a really bad moment. And I think that that's what tipped him off, because it's like, no, if things were really calm, maybe, you know, finally we have a moment, but no, the things are chaos right now. Why would you bring this up? Yeah, I think that he did. I think he kind of figured it out and then was letting it play out, because that was the only way to really know what the extent of it was. Mm. But they did play it really low key, like his suspicions.
Yeah.
I do agree with you on that.
And I love that there's still hidden S.H.I.E.L.D. spots that people don't know about. that was also a nice little tidbit.
Yeah, I think that that's one of those deals where, you know, I don't think S.H.I.E.L.D. will ever get away from that. I think it could be the most legit organization in the history of the world, and they'd still find a way to have hidden bases.
Yeah.
And hidden things. The Koenig thing, Koenig, I never get it right. It was fun. Patton Oswalt is always fun in this show, but I really feel like this is one of those things that proves the rule that, you know, some things are best in small doses.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't want this sort of slapstick every show. No.
And it was almost too much for this episode. For me.
I think when they had the Beatnik Poet one, that was
that was pushing it.
I saw the shark as he walked in the room. Yes,
it was left shark or right shark. Anyway,
it's always left shark.
Always left shark. It was just a little bit much, and then it was like, oh yeah, it was clever that LT turned out to be the sister, but then it was one of those things where you're like, but this works when it's Patton Oswalt. Mm. It really doesn't work when it's somebody else.
No.
So, I think it may have been too much of a good thing. Leave him to the badges and the lanyards.
Well, no, like I said, I think he works pretty well in small doses, but I don't want to see another episode like this with him through the season.
I think that this was, maybe they realized that they had their shot now, so they took it, but we'll find out, I suppose. But yeah, especially with everything else going on, it seemed like it was a little bit out of place. And for me, I don't know about you, the reveal of the superior. What did you think of that?
I didn't think of much. There wasn't much context to put the superior into. I don't feel like I know anything about him enough to be concerned.
Were you like me thinking that it was going to turn out to be someone we knew already?
Yeah. I was actually hoping it was the director.
Yeah, maybe.
I would have loved to seen that. I would have loved to. I don't know how many more back people they have. I thought they could have brought back. I was almost hoping. I was like, nah, they want to bring. Oh, geez, why am I blanking out on his name already? I'm like, what's his name that got killed or after he was possessed?
Ward.
Ward. I was half expecting Ward to pop back up again.
Right there, that would have been at least, you know, like, oh, hey, that, look.
That would have been a real interesting thing if Ward came back. I didn't really expect any of the Hydra people back, but I was hoping it'd be something. I would have loved for it to have been Coulson.
Mm.
And then we'd maybe figure out who the real Coulson is or something like that.
Or it's an LMD of Coulson.
Or who's the LMD of Coulson? Oh.
There you go.
But they showed him, but it really didn't. I was like, they popped him up. They made one line mention to him. Oh, you'll have to see this guy. And I think last week's episode. So, you know, there was no real build up to him. I, you know, typically with this kind of thing, we see the leader commit or at least order some sort of bad, atrocious thing or cause something bad to happen. And we didn't get any of that. We're just like, oh, here's this guy.
Yeah.
With the coolest name, Superior, not even, you know, Chief Superior or Head Superior, you know, just the Superior.
It's like, the Superior.
That's kind of lame, you know.
And Cisco
could have done a lot better.
There you go.
Yeah, but so it was very anticlimactic. It was I was hoping for, you know, something more, but we didn't get it. And maybe they'll build them up, but as far as a reveal, it was kind of without any, you know, framing. It was pretty weak. So we'll see what happens. That was probably one of the weakest part of the episode for me, honestly.
Same here. Just the whole idea that he was against the Inhumans just because they hadn't earned their power.
Yeah.
He was basically the most low key, laid back racist, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the leader of the Watchdogs, and I don't think he's got any gravitas to him at all. He's just kind of there.
You would think that type of man would have to be at least have some charisma or some sort of attraction about him, and he was so quiet and low key. I don't see how a person like that necessarily leads a group, but I imagine Nick Fury isn't up there, you know, kissing babies either. So maybe there's something to his particular motivation or habits. So like I said, though, I think they did a good job with, you know, the Hydra, with the, you know, with the alien concept of giving you some large enemy that you could actually, you know, fear would really screw things up bad for everyone. And I just, maybe they are trying to go back to more of a, much like they introduced the Watch Dogs, and they never really grabbed so much traction as a horrible villain that could not be defeated if you put the manpower to it. Maybe that's sort of the genre that they're trying to keep in for right now, that they're, you know, you have these people that you just have to, you know, figure. It's not that they're impossible to beat. They're just, you got to figure out how to do it kind of thing. It's just going to take time and resources to catch them versus these things that could destroy the earth. So maybe there's a sort of a power level of the villain that they're scaling back and making things more, no pun intended, human villains versus these, you know, mega overpowering alien ones.
That makes sense.
And in some ways that is SHIELD's sort of, you know, area of expertise anyway.
Yeah, it always seemed like they were going out of their way to try to throw the more super powered individuals into the SHIELD arena when they were really kind of more the terrorist threat type of people. Edmund did give his comments on this. Thankfully, he was able to give some comments on some episodes, and he said, solid episode, buttressed by the geeky bookends of Maximum Koenig, a.k.a. Patton Oswalt, and Fitzsimmons' relationship getting more and more real. Nice to see Captain Vane back from the dead, and he is right about the onions and vodka. Yes, the actor who played the Superior is the guy who played Captain Vane on Black Sails.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and finally he says, and yeah, we all knew Phil was smelling a rat. So that gets to your point about...
So I guess Edmund thinks it was earlier, yeah.
I think so.
Interesting. Oh, good. I mean, at least I'm not the only one who had that perception, so that makes,
no, I
makes
think,
me feel
I think
better.
It was a pretty common one amongst us here. Good. All right. That brings us to our number two show for the week, and that is The Magicians, Season 2, Episode 1, Knight of Crowns. In the aftermath of their clash with the Beast, Quentin and his friends scramble for a new plan as Season 2 gets underway. Meanwhile, Julia and the Beast strike a dangerous deal. This got an 8.5. Really another solid start to the season here. It doesn't pull any of the punches that they had in the more mature side of things in the first season. So the language is still there. The situations between characters are still quite there, and they don't have any problem mentioning any of that. But what I like is that it is actually used to push the characters in more interesting directions in terms of where they are, what kind of situations they're willing to accept in order to deal with and survive even the situations that they find themselves in. And it's always kind of neat because this show is all about subverting certain genre forms, especially when it comes to the whole magical school thing. That was the first season, and they really blew that one up a bit. And now we have something where it is basically they are playing, it is a riff on the whole Narnia idea. But if, you know, having a more crude and lewd and pushing the boundaries type of attitude about magical college, just imagine what their version of Narnia looks like. It definitely is not kid-friendly, but it is intriguing in the way that they deal with things, in some of the ways that they then take ideas and expand out on them in ways that make sense when you sit back and say, yeah, when you're not trying to make this just palatable for all ages, there are implications to things, and some pretty obvious ones.
Yeah, I saw the teasers for this season, and yeah, they did definitely say that it was like, you know, they even said that it was sort of, you know, Narnia meets, I forget what they said, maybe Game of Thrones or something, but the cut together looked really interesting, and I did sort of pencil down that I'm gonna have to give this season a try because I sort of liked at least the concept that they showed in the teaser.
Yeah, I would have to kind of like give it thought whether or not I would recommend that people jump into the second season, because there is a lot of background information that the first season gives in terms of the characters and who they are and why they're doing what they're doing. And you don't quite get the sense of character growth if you don't have that background, because some of them really start off being not so great people, and you kind of see how they are still not great people, but they are growing. I'm thinking one in particular is still really, they got a lot of ground to cover before they are ever going to be considered to be well-rounded members of society, but... yeah, they are definitely, I think they're stepping up their game a little bit, and the first episode coming back was a pretty strong one. And the best thing about it is that they do maintain a certain comedic side to everything as well. So as serious as things get and as dark as things get, they also still try to inject humor into things. And as I just said the word serious, that was just enough for my phone to try to ask me what I wanted. But anyway. That brings us to our number one show for the week, and that is, boy, surprising results these days. Timeless, Season 1, Episode 13, Karma Chameleon. Wyatt and Rufus go rogue by traveling back to the 1980s in a desperate bid to save Jessica's life. Lucy covers for them in the present as Agent Christopher discovers the ship is missing. Also, Anthony Broll makes a startling confession. So this episode also came in at an 8.5, so it was in a tie with the Magicians, but definitely got the top bid because there was more than one score. And Gary, in particular, I'm interested in your comments because I think this was the highest scored show on your list this week.
Oh, yeah, I thought this, this hit a whole bunch of different ranges here. We had, Wyatt and Rufus going back to the, I guess, mid-80s and trying to prevent the serial murderer's parents from meeting so that he wouldn't be, so the character would never be born. It seemed a bit of overkill, honestly. Why not just go and stop him from killing? But I guess that wouldn't make for as nice a story. So I thought that was a little clunky, and I loved all the no matter what they did, time seemed to want to reassert itself. So I found that very interesting. I enjoyed this whole it's Brule, Anthony Brule. I enjoyed his whole view of Rittenhouse and what he feels their plans are to, you know, go back and change, you know, rewrite history, so to speak, and how well the actor played what a terrifying thing that would be. I was sorry to see that he ended up getting killed on the end, because I felt he was a different voice that we don't necessarily see in Flynn's camp. This sort of the voice of moderation that Flynn, you know, doesn't seem to ever really exhibit. So I thought that would be a nice way to include that voice, and I'm sorry to see that he won't be around anymore. I loved how Lucy was talking with what's Denise, is it? Her the government handler, I think it's.
I'm struggling to recall myself, unfortunately. But anyway,
or yes, Agent Christopher, maybe. Or so. Anyway, I enjoyed their conversations when they had. I couldn't help but chuckle. Well, I called you as soon as he told me. No, you called me 24 minutes after. They're like, what? You're spying on me? Yes, we have protection on you. You're welcome. Yes, that was. It was a cute little interchange, I like that this was not really a I like that they chose to skip a celebrity historic episode where we didn't have a famous person from history in it, that they did just go back to, you know, try and stop that, and they didn't shoehorn a famous person into this. So that part I liked. And honestly, to me, that shows the strength of the show, that they can do without their trope and still carry a great episode, you know, without their gimmick, so to speak. It was, you know, I could feel Wyatt's pain when the guy slipped and smacked his head against the parking block and died as a result of it. The actor did at least for me a tremendous job of conveying his sorrow and horror that's how this all ended up. Even though he was doing it to bring his wife back, the horror he felt over it having to do it that way was palpable for me, and it was very touching, and that definitely helped push this episode up for me. I loved how Rufus enjoyed being back in the 80s so much. He just seemed, you know, in heaven in that bar and like video games. And, you know, he was dressed in, from what I took, it was looked like Tubbs from Miami Vice. And So that was I thought that was really enjoyable. And I enjoy how even though Wyatt did his research, he didn't realize that the plane landed early. Like, he was checking flight schedules and he didn't know it landed 20 minutes early, so he missed the first time. And just anything that could go wrong for Wyatt during this whole thing just kept going wrong. The cop saw his gun and stopped him. They tried to stop the introduction, and then the guy was the bartender. And that it was almost a comedy. Well, it wasn't a comedy. It was just a series of these errors to make you realize, I guess, maybe sometimes why they need Lucy, because she thinks up all this stuff and goes that extra mile that Wyatt's not even considering. Then we had the slight red herring when we had the blow up in Oakland that we thought might mean the end of the time machine, or at least the mothership, where we – and gosh, wouldn't that change the whole dynamic of the story if that happened? But it turned out it didn't, and we just saw Rule show up dead, and that was – so that means things are still going on, and that I guess Flynn's new pilot, I can't – Carol is very much in Team Flynn, I guess. And what did she – I don't think they ever revealed to us what she saw or why she hit again. Was it just because Rittenhouse was involved to begin with? Or do you remember, John, why she hit in the 1800s? The other pilot that they found last episode?
That was last episode, right? I think it was just the simply the fact that it was a good place for her to hide because no one else was supposed to be able to get there.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. And but I'm sort of surprised she's went back and sort of really embraced this whole cause. We know Flynn is a Flynn is a dynamic kind of person, but that sort of surprised me a little bit. But there was Brule's speech to Lucy about saying how Flynn is the only person between Rittenhouse taking over completely, and it, as we've talked about many times, how I don't know how bad a guy Flynn really is. And to hear Brule go on about him that, he's sort of the last defense against them right now is, sort of really makes me scratch my head even more than I had been in the past that, maybe he really is the good guy and all these things that he's doing is destabilizing Rittenhouse more. And that's why he's doing the things he's doing. And, I'd love to hear another 5 minutes from Brule about this, but we'll never get it. It was a tease, I guess, to some extent. But then we got the sort of ultimate tease at the end of this episode, and I was sort of—I don't want to say I was blown away because we know it's coming. We know that at some point Lucy is going to be helping Flynn. He's got the diary that basically says so. So we know it's going to happen, and I guess this might be how it's going to happen, where she goes to meet her father and sees that and tells her she knows that he's in Rittenhouse, and then he's relieved and he's like, "Now you can help us," or something like that, and. Now I'm really scratching my head, but in a sense, we know we're going to reach this point in some way that she's going to be, helping Flynn along. And when I combine what the father said along with what Brule said, geez, it feels like this whole show's about ready to take a 180-degree turn somehow. So I'm very much looking forward to the next episodes. I hope. I don't think they can get it done this season, though. Please keep going. I'm trying to think. Wait, was this the last episode of the season?
No, I think there's more.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But so I don't
see. They had a preview anyway. So
yeah.
I think
that's right.
16
that's right.
Episodes, maybe? I'm thinking maybe they got extended a little bit, if I recall correctly.
I think you're right. Yeah. I'm enjoying this more than ever. I'm so glad that they broke out of their, as I said, their history person of the week format. And I really like this a lot. The nice, really touching personal moments for me. Humor, revelations, and I really think they sort of opened the book to a few new chapters in this episode. What'd you think about it, John? I mean, I know you didn't rate it necessarily as high as I did, but you're still gave it a pretty good rating. Did you have a favorite part of this episode?
I think you hit on a lot of the points that I found pretty intriguing about this one. I guess in general, what I like is that this episode broke the team up a little bit, where they a couple of them went rogue, so to speak, and they weren't all just on, like you said, one mission to go to a time period and go meet this famous person or, the quote unquote, the truth behind the legend and then, move on. It was more, hey, we're going to have a plot heavy episode that is going to really kind of advance the story of the main characters and also follow up on what we've been saying for a little while now, which is that they are increasingly being willing to do pretty much anything for their own personal gain. And their motivations at this point are identical to Flynn.
They might even be less. There's a selfish. He's trying to stop Rittenhouse.
Yeah. He took his personal thing and kind of elevated it to a cause. They're just all trying to get loved ones back for all intents and purposes. And we've all seen other time travel stories, where that's not necessarily the best ideas. So I like the idea that they are turning into something that they were willing to do all of this to fight in the beginning. And I hope that that's where this was all meant to land. I know that when they extended the season, one of the things I was concerned about was, well, if you're telling a story and you had the story beats for that, and now you've been given more episodes, how are you going to pull that off? And I haven't really read anywhere how they're pulling it off, but I have this feeling that what they did is they essentially added a few episodes into the middle, you know, maybe out of production order and such, but still, it seems like they took a little bit longer to get here because this feels like what they were probably trying to get to by the end of those initial 13 episodes. And maybe they just threw a couple extra steps in there. But this is definitely where, what the show needed to get to. The level that they needed to achieve is this whole idea of being able to have an episode that is just about the characters. And it worked really well. And like you said, I'm really intrigued to see about this family connection. All right, that is it for the top three for the week then. And that means that I'm just going to check time to make sure what kind of time we've got. And we do have a few moments here to go into any other shows that are on the list that have more than a few scores. And Gary, was there anything that you wanted to jump into off of the rest of the list? There's quite a few. There were 21 shows, yeah. 22 episodes. So well, we have a lot on the list.
I'd actually like to talk about the new kid on the block. I would like to talk to you about Riverdale. I'd love to hear your opinions on it and what you think, and we could, maybe could talk about that for a little while.
Sure. I mean, I kind of mentioned it a couple episodes ago, I think, that I think it's interesting in that it depends on which way you're coming from, which direction you're coming from, I think, which is if you are watching this and or approaching it and you didn't know about the whole Archie Comics angle, I think that it presents itself in one way. If you go in knowing that it is a retelling or re-envisioning of Archie Comics, then everything happens you're going to see everything from a completely different light. Because I know some people who didn't realize it until late in the game, and even I didn't realize at first that that was the show I was watching, because we watched so many different things that I knew a show was coming along that was but I really was looking more for the Archie title in order to know that that's which one it was, and it took me a while to realize this was the one. I just thought they were kind of ironically using those names because it would be this kind of tongue-in-cheek thing to go along with a show that is about, you know, small-town America seeming really, you know, bright and cheery and inoffensive on the surface, and then underneath being a lot more twisted and dark. A little bit a la David Lynch, a la, you know, aspects of Twin Peaks.
You can feel that, yeah.
Yeah, and I like those elements. I always have. I like that whole idea that there's something beneath the surface, you know, the whole thing that I like, you know, beyond the fact that it's, you know, the whole really weird, twisted, dark angle of Twin Peaks that you know, in the mythology of it, is the whole idea that you've got these, almost this 50s pastiche going on, right? Because that's kind of the whole thing with Archie, too, and it's like, yeah, you've got the sweet little homecoming queen. Nope. Ain't so sweet. And I think that there's there's a little bit of an allure to that, because we always sit back and we look around and we say, you know, where is that kind of small town? Where is that kind of place where everything is so innocent and nice and everybody is civil and there's, you know, and it's like, no, that doesn't exist. Even when it seems like it does, it doesn't exist. And there is a little bit of fun in taking then the whole Archie archetype and turning it on its head a bit. So from that angle, I really kind of enjoyed it. It was a pilot. Most definitely was a pilot. And I probably gave it a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt because I was enjoying the visual flair of it and the kind of Lynchian angle to it. On top of the fact that it could have gone so much worse being a reimagining of Archie.
And they played with everything. They really,
they really did. And yet, I felt it worked well enough for a start. I am definitely intrigued to see if they can keep this going. But it definitely has some pilotitis going on there with it, too. I'm curious. You didn't give it that much lower of a score, but you definitely feel like you had some misgivings or concerns.
Well, Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with all the Archie stuff, or at least reasonably so, I feel. A lot of the names, made sense. I would have liked to see the actual characters dropped into this world where something changes, but so much of the characters are different, I want to say, or flawed. I guess they're trying to make them more human, but at the same time, I would have loved to seen the classic characters dropped into this town, have all this stuff start happening, and see how they change, rather than reveal to me how they currently are, so to speak. Honestly, the only person that I'd say almost feels true to character would probably be Veronica. All the rest of the Archie gang, if we want to use those sort of terms, are very different from their source material characters. A lot of people are. Betty now is this ADD daughter with mother issues and sister in the nut house, and where she was originally billed as the sweet all American girl, and it ended there.
As the Twin Peaks connection here, you do realize that her mom was played by the actress who was Shelley Johnson in Twin Peaks.
Yes, I do. Yes.
Yeah, that was now the fact that we're rewatching Twin Peaks. So back when she was, 20, early 20s, it's just like, wow, okay, that proves to me that yes, time has passed. Okay, recalibrate, and then you get to hit with Luke Perry, and it's like, oh. God,
I was waiting for him to ask for keys. Anyway, right? That's it. But I didn't mind those, and I really didn't feel those were gratuitous because I felt like both actors fit well for their roles.
Oh,
they
yeah,
weren't just
you did,
just look at the camera and smile and everyone chuckles. No, I thought they meshed pretty well. Although I will admit I have a hard time thinking of Luke Perry that old, but geez, I guess I am too. So there was a little bit of, oh geez, he's not, can't be. Well, yeah, he is. Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, geez, I got a kid's 15. Yeah, I guess. Damn reality. Anyway, so once I accepted his age, he fit very well. So, but yeah, just that so many people's flawed. Then Archie hooked up with a teacher over the summer. What the? As I said, they made significant changes to the character base that we're going forward with. So, that held me back a little bit. You're right. There was a little bit of pilotitis. Something seemed a little telegraphed, which I realized they do in pilots. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. I enjoyed some of the, I'll refer to it as non-traditional casting, recasting Reggie and Pops as African-Americans. I thought as Asian and African-American, worked well with nary a blink of an eye. I mean, other than just noting that they weren't that way in the original comic book, but both characters seemed to work very well within the structure of the film. So I thought that was great. It moved forward without a change in beat at all. So I liked it. I liked that part a lot. Of course, they had a gay character that they've introduced in the comic book a few years ago with the same name. So I knew where that was sort of going even before they said anything. And I like the strong Twin Peaks flavor of it. I love the almost flourish that the cherry blossom, sort of almost brandishes the sacrifice of her brother. Her suffering is more of a badge than is more of a bow than a cross, I guess is what I want to say. She almost wears it with pride or glory as opposed to sadness. And then you get these creepy little things thrown in every once in a while, like during her party. Oh, the band is going to play the song my mother met when they conceived, where it was playing when we were conceived.
I'm like, that's when maybe the writers were trying a little too hard to be Lynchian.
Exactly. Like, I was like, I loved it, including Josie and the Pussycats, which is another actually Archie property.
That is the moment, actually, Gary, when we realized when we were watching it. That's when it's like I stopped it and I said, wait, hold on, let me look this up. Because now I really feel like this went from being potentially just being slightly ironic reference to, oh, wait, this is the reimagining show.
Yeah.
Oh. Because Josie and the Pussycats is like, that's a little further along than we're just using the same names. This is like, no, this is definitely.
Well, at least they're not in space.
Yeah, that's true.
So I thought that worked really well too in the reimagining. I liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think they have a lot of good points. It's a little, as I said, the characters are a little bit more shifted than I expected going into the show to start off with. I expect them to change going through the show, but I didn't expect them to start off this different. But I found it very interesting. I feel there was a shock value. Obviously, Veronica and Betty kissing during the cheerleader tryouts was, you know, obviously just, you know, shock value, if nothing else. In some places, I think, feel like they tried a little too hard. Archie's obsession with the teacher seems a little, well, it's over the top. It's probably extremely appropriate for if that happened to a kid at that age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my thought, is that it makes sense that he'd be obsessed, especially if he was kind of the goody two-shoes kid before.
Yes. Yeah. So I thought it was over the top, but then I thought about it for a second, said, no, it's probably actually spot on for what it is. So I'm looking forward to it. The revelation of the body at the end of the episode with the shot in the head obviously affects Cherry Blossom's story that he fell in. And so what happened then? We got that flashback, I guess, twice while Archie was, making out with the teacher. And when they were actually out of the car making out, we heard the shot. And as I actually had to go back and watch the beginning a second time. And as I was watching it a second time, as they cut away from them in the boat and where she showed up the next morning, right during the cut, at first I thought it was like lightning or thunder because there were stormy clouds. But then I realized, no, it was a gunshot there too. I just didn't catch it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, which, you know, is, as you said, is sort of a layer of Lynchian kind of detail that you might not catch the first time, but when you go back, you go, oh, that was a pleasant depth to see. So I'm looking forward to the second episode, and I'm not sure what to expect the next episode, honestly, and that's not a bad thing. I'm just not sure, you know, a pilot tries to push so many different buttons to get people to like it. I'm not sure what of the several different rabbit holes, if not all of them, they're going to try and go down as the series progresses. So, you know, I have to see, are they going to really try and stay with this Lynchian model? Is it going to become another CW teen angst kind of thing? I think it'll stay. It feels like they're setting it up to keep it Lynchian, but that's awfully hard to do. Even Lynch had a hard time at it. So,
I think that that's entirely true. And that's why I keep saying we need to give it a few episodes because,
yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I'm rewatching Twin Peaks, and you can see immediately that as soon as there were people who were not directly involved with him in the creation of the show, but rather people who were trying to do that stuff, you could tell when they were trying too hard to try to do it. When it wasn't natural, it was something that they were trying to ape and emulate, and it just wasn't sincere. Like, for all that it's really just weird, it's hard to do weird I want to say sincerity again, but that's not the word that I'm thinking of, but it's just fully committed to just simply letting it happen in an organic way. And then there's things where you're forcing a camera shot that really doesn't make any sense because you're trying to make it look surreal. And it doesn't fit. And that's where I feel like you can pull this off in a pilot. You might even pull it off in a couple episodes. But when you've got a stable of writers and directors trying to churn this out week after week, it's going to hit the same kind of wall that Twin Peaks did in its second season, where it was just more and more people trying to pretend or trying to shoot for that particular moon and not hitting the target. So I agree with you. I think that that's going to be the hardest thing for them to do, is to keep this up. They could just go and be generally noir, which would be probably just fine here and there. But they are definitely trying to be that edgy weirdness in this first episode.
Yes, and I was waiting for Jughead to order a coffee and pie, but that didn't happen. So
not yet.
I have hopes, though. I have high hopes. That's an awfully inviting table in that diner, so... We'll see Pi at some point, I'm sure.
All right. Well, yeah, we went into that in pretty good detail, and I think that we pretty much are at the end of this particular episode. So, as usual, we will be logging in our scores so that we can continue to aggregate them throughout the season, and we will eventually talk about where all these shows fall. But for the most part, you can already get the sense that they fell into the, you know, roughly 7.5 to 8 range for most of those other shows. So, approaching above average, but not really excelling in that way that the top three did. So, that all being the case, we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Gary, any last thoughts for the week?
We didn't discuss it this week, but Grimm is still very good. Give it a shot. Keep watching. We're reaching a good point towards the end here. Don't give up on it.
That's right. Definitely don't. You can go ahead and see my review for that particular episode over at VogNetwork.com. And I also want to give a shout-out real quick. We're not going to get into details to Legends of Tomorrow, because even though we do say that it had a bit of an identity crisis coming in, it has hit its stride lately. In my opinion, anyway, and I think that Henry agreed with me, too, with his score, but I think that it's actually hitting its own stride of self-mockery and lighthearted fun so much that it's actually making me wonder how it could possibly be the same universe as the other shows, because I just can't see how the Legion of Doom, those characters, could ever be taken seriously on their other shows again, because it just they're so much fun as these conniving villains, a trio of villains here on Legends of Tomorrow in this particular most recent episode. There's some great comedy in there.
And they seem like such a mismatch for the power levels that our heroes have. It's a joke.
It is, but that's part of the... It's like they know it, and they kind of wink at you. And yeah. I think that that works. I think that's the level that this show, the level of ridiculousness that it can operate at, because you can throw a lot of rules out if you are willing to embrace this level of ridiculousness.
So are you saying it's the Deadpool of the DCW?
It's getting there, to be honest. It kind of is, because Mick, in particular, you know, Heatwave, as a character, should not work in this universe. He is so over the top, but he is hilariously funny on this show, and he is just, like, the perfect character for the show. So, and I would say it's even amazing to me that a character like Professor Stein is showing so many comedy chops. I know Victor Garber has a pretty diverse background, but this is just what I mean, is that this is not even, like, crossing them over right now with, say, Arrow would be such a tonal dissonance. It's not even funny, because, yeah, it works when it's this, when it is just saying, you know what, forget the rules, forget everything else, we're just going to have really good comic book fun. And yeah, they're going to have to figure out how that works, because I don't get paid to figure out how that and Arrow somehow are in the same universe. So, okay. We'll go ahead and leave it there. And we'll go ahead and let this slightly longer episode stand, and we will let this week come to a close. So next time, we will definitely be talking about some other shows that are returning for their next seasons, and who knows what other kind of news items will emerge. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG Network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.